You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Jonathan Capehart here today for Leonard Lopate, and this is WNYC and WNYC.org. There is a luminous stillness to Pavel Pavlovsky's new film, Ida, which concerns a young novitiate nun who learns some startling news about herself and her family in the weeks before she's supposed to take her final vows. It's a haunting, unusual movie in many ways, especially in how it confronts the aftermath of the Holocaust from a non-Jewish perspective. Pavel's previous films, The Last Resort and My Summer of Love, were critical hits around the world. Ida will be screening at the Tribeca Film Festival this Sunday before it opens officially on May 2nd at Lincoln Plaza and Film Forum. And I'm delighted it brings him on the Leonard Lopate Show. I was saying before, Pavel, that the discussion we were having leading up to the actual interview, I wish we had had on air. Maybe we can get into it, because your film is a beautiful, beautiful film. How long had you been working on this project?
It's hard to say. I usually play with like three or four ideas at the same time, so scripts and treatments. So I first thought of more or less this story 6-7 years ago. Then I abandoned it and I came back and wrote a little bit. Stopped writing. I keep, you know, juggling things. It started coming together about 3 years ago when I got the script more or less to work, or I started thinking concretely, looking for locations, looking for actors, and started believing that it's possible to make this sort of film in Poland today. So it's hard to judge with me. I work all the time and I'm idle all the time.
So was it hard to cast the part of Ida?
It was really hard, yes, because it's a very unusual character, very rare to find in nature these days. It's
were you looking for?
I was looking for a certain inner strength, calm, a kind of timeless quality, and somebody who doesn't grimace with her face much and who has strong feelings and emotions without having to translate them into facial gestures. And I looked for professional actors and students of drama for months and months, and I was getting a bit desperate until we found this girl in a cafe who was sitting in a cafe reading a book and who never in her life wanted to act.
And she never acted before
and doesn't even want to act, which is a rare find these days, because most young people kind of dream of nothing other than make music or acting. And she just was, you know, reading a book. She was a student of philosophy and history of art. She'd seen some films of mine, so she was curious to meet me after, you know, we approached her. And then slowly I realized that she's my woman. She's Ida. You know, she had this stillness, this seriousness. She was a totally atheist, which is also kind of not common in Poland, and very principled one. So I kind of knew I had something to build on, and she was very much how I imagined Ida to be.
One of the characteristics that this actress had or has is a cleft chin, which, because the way this movie is shot, I have a ton of questions about how this movie was shot, but because the way the movie is shot, I found myself drawn to that, the cleft in her chin. Was that something that you looked for when you were looking to cast Ida, or is it something that just became a star all on its own?
Well, you know, I was so desperate to find anyone who fitted the part that I wasn't, you know, cleft chin was the least of my problems, you know, so I was... I don't know, she just had an interesting face. And you should add charming cleft chin, otherwise people think it's some kind of weird...
No.
weird phenomenon.
She's beautiful. Beautiful
so that's definitely an added bonus, but she had just a great face. You know? And then I kind of worked the cleft chin into the script at some point. You know, it became a bit of a feature. But also in a film where you have not many elements, and I did keep it fairly spare, you know. The eye is drawn to everything that's there, and that was partly the idea of the film, that you just put in not too many elements and show not too much, but it you know, suggests as much as possible. And so the cleft chin or whatever little features, elements in the landscape occurred, they become terribly meaningful, and I'm very happy about that.
I just want to say, I'm John Capehart in for Leonard Lopate, speaking with Pavel Pavlikovsky about his new film, Ida. One thing I do want to clear up, I said in the intro that there's a screening at Tribeca. There's no screening at Tribeca, but the movie will open on May 2nd. Let's get into talking about how this was shot, because the thing that struck me from the first scene is how each scene is suitable for framing. Beautifully done lines, curves. It's very spare, but your eye goes all over the screen. Why? And the other thing is, it's done in black and white. Mm-hmm. Why did you shoot in black and white?
Well, the whole idea is from the very beginning when I was thinking this story up and writing, I saw it in black and white, and I saw it still, and I saw it as very much a photographic film where the image is as important as the performance, as the story. I wanted a film where practically all the scenes are done in one shot from one angle, but the shot is very considered and kind of rich. And I wanted to do it like that to make the film not feel like these sort of films that one gets to see these days. Not, you know, a film that is noisy, cuts a lot, and and just tells the story. I wanted the film to be a bit of a meditation and to make people look at the story, which is a kind of dramatic story, and characters are complicated and dramatic, but I wanted people to see it, to perceive it in a kind of universal, timeless way. And shooting it like that without the camera moving, making it photographic and a little bit abstract, helped me to elevate it above a kind of storytelling historical films about certain things that occurred in Poland in 62. I wanted it to be more universal.
Now, let's talk about some of these characters. You had the Mother Superior tell Ida that she should meet her aunt, the sole remaining member of her family, before she took her vows to become a full nun. And the aunt is Wanda. Mm-hmm. Talk about Wanda.
Yeah, she's a great, complicated character. I mean,
she smokes, she drinks,
she's
intense.
She was a kind of very, very convinced idealistic Marxist before the war. Then after the war, she became a kind of part of the communist establishment and did all sorts of unpleasant things. She was a state prosecutor and responsible for the death of innocent people out of her convictions, and also she was just part of this machine that she helped to create. Now when we find her, this heroic and murderous period of communism, Stalinist period, is over, and suddenly her path is not clear anymore. She's been moved away from a position of power, so she's a little bit kind of lost and bitter. She also is a woman who likes men, who likes music, who likes dancing. She's a very contradictory figure and very much like us, I suppose. So I think most of the audience will probably identify with her more than with Ida, who is a much more peculiar, unusual, rare character.
How did you come up with the character of Wanda?
Well, she's a combination of things. You know, she has certain features of my father, for example, her sense of humor, and some of the lines I gave her actually come from my dad, my late father. But the idea for her came from an encounter possibly with somebody I met in the 80s who was a very charming old lady, a very kind of ironic, warm, wise old bird. I met her in Oxford. She was the wife of a professor. And I really liked her. I just met her maybe 3 or 4 times. 10 years after I lost sight of her and her husband, I heard on the BBC news that the Polish government was requesting the extradition of this very woman on grounds of crimes against humanity. It turned out she had been a state prosecutor in the late 40s, early 50s, and she had blood on her hands. She engineered the death and showed trials of totally innocent people. So I couldn't square how this wise lady, who was warm and funny and, you know, had a sense of humor about everything, how once she was this kind of fanatical creature and who had blood on her hands. And then I realized that, you know, most of us are capable of all sorts of things within one lifetime. And the way we are in our 20s, or in our teens, where we can get fanatical about stuff. And then it can be very different from the way we are in our 80s, when we've kind of seen all sorts of things and have a certain distance from the world. Mm-hmm. So that was the kind of the impulse. But Wanda is not a portrait of that woman at all. You know, she's got other features of many different characters, as it happens in fiction. You know, you just use all sorts of stuff.
Another character in the movie is this saxophonist, Lise, who Wanda and Ida meet as they're driving their way to the town where they're looking to find someone connected to their family so that they can find their family members. I'm trying not to give away the plot like I've done another time on this show. Talk about Lise, and he doesn't talk very much, yet he has a very powerful presence in the film.
Yeah, he's a kind of composite figure again of a certain type of cool Polish creature that doesn't exist anymore, but early 60s were full of them. You know, there was a writer called Huasco, there was a composer called Komeda who, you know, wrote music for Polanski's early films. And Poland was actually a very cool place in the late 50s and early 60s, probably cooler than it is today. And there were a lot of kind of beatnik attitudes that filtered in, a lot of music. Jazz was huge in Poland. There was an explosion of jazz in the late 50s. And Poland was generally known as the most fun barrack in the communist camp. You know, it had this bigger margin of freedom than other communist countries. So jazz, hip attitudes, pop music, were all there. And Lise, the saxophonist, is a little bit of a sum total of all these features. You know, he's a little bit from my own head, my fantasy, like an echo of that generation. And the actor, it was very difficult to find an actor among young men today who could reflect that period, because humanity has changed quite drastically. But this one actor had something with a little bit of stylization, and above all, he could play the sax for real. And
so he really played the saxophone in the
film. He didn't play the Coltrane, of course, which is much too difficult, right. But he did play all that kind of more rockabilly stuff, you know. So he could play, and he was really familiar with the instrument. And I wanted, because everything happens in one shot in the film, so it needed to be totally convincing.
At one point, Ida tells Lise that she grew up in Poland, and now she finds out that she's Jewish too. And again, like we said at the beginning, she's about to become a nun, but they get together.
Yeah.
But then she changes her mind. I'm trying not to give it away, but why not go for the happily ever after ending instead of the more complicated ending that you gave the film?
But maybe it's a happier ending. What do we know? You know, I mean, possibly in the long term, it's a much happier ending. You know? Without giving away what happens, it's difficult to talk.
Well, there's several things that happen.
But their relationship, I mean, their attraction is very peculiar, because she'd never seen a man close up, you know, before, an attractive man. But above all, she's never heard this music that he's playing. And when he plays Naima with his band, it completely enraptures her. So she kind of falls in love with him via the music, which is deeply spiritual and kind of all-embracing. And she knows he's got some kind of mystery that she wants to be around. Whereas he just is very attracted to this woman, girl, who has no makeup, who has no kind of, try to seduce him. Yeah. She doesn't try to do anything. She's just herself. He's, you know, it's a very attractive proposition. So there's a strong attraction between them. But they're like two ships in the night, you know. I mean, how do you make that work? And, you have to see the film.
You have to see. At one point, he does say to her, "You don't understand the power you have, the pull you have, or the power you have over me." And I'm looking at her, and she's in her nun's habit.
The only
thing you can see on her is her face in that the cleft in her chin.
There's no mirrors in the monastery, so she never kind of looked at herself much, and that's part of her charm, I suppose. And he feels that power. Here's a woman who doesn't try to, you know, act, seduce her, doesn't kind of, you know, do the usual stuff that he's used to. I mean, he's in this kind of hip band that, you know, where everybody pretends something, everyone strikes poses, and here is a girl that doesn't strike poses. So that's obviously
she doesn't strike poses. She wears the same thing all the time. Her eyes are always cast down, very very humble.
But when they come up, it's dramatic. Yeah.
Yes, when the eyes come up, the hair comes down. She's in. She's very beautiful in her habit, out of her habit. I wish we had more time to talk about this film and give it its due, because it really is just a beautiful, beautiful movie. Been speaking with Pavel Pawlikowski about his movie Ida. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
Oh, and I should...